on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. And you know where we can be found when Saturday comes again. We'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We were formed in 1881. Clans in Orient and so begun. The old story and on it runs. We're like an Orient from E10. Whatever challenge has come our way, the only faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day. We're like an Orient from E10. Like an Orient from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. So you know where we can be found when Saturday comes again. We'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're like an Orient from E10. Like an Orient from E10. Like an Orient. Like an Orient. Like an Orient from E10. We're also the end.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Orient Hour. My name is Billy Herring, and I am in the studio tonight on my own. Unforeseen circumstances mean I've been left last man standing, but I'm going to guide you through. We've got some great interviews coming tonight. We've got Victor's View as normal. We've got Roper's Rant as well. And we've got a fantastic interview with Martin Ling, our director of football. So it'll be great to hear from Martin, especially with the upcoming transfer window in January. Now, let's have a little bit of a chat, shall we, before we go into those interviews about Saturday's game. Orient lost 3-0 to Derby, and I've got to be honest with you, I went to a wake on Saturday night, and it was probably more fun than being at the game, if I'm truthful with you. We'll go through the teams just quickly, just in case there's anyone there that missed the game at all. So in goal, Orient will start with Solbrim. Tom James, Brandon Cooper, Dan Happy and Rob Hunt made up the back four, with Idris Elmazouni, Jordan Brown, Theo Archibald, George Moncur, Rose Tirio and Joe Piggott as our starting lineup. Joe Piggott starting up front on his own. Interesting lineup. I think that I don't think anyone was necessarily unhappy with the lineup, and it seemed as though we went into the game with quite a strong team and some interesting options on the bench as well, with Ethan Galbraith back in the squad, Dan Ashayi continuing with his comeback as well. So people happy to see those boys on the bench, giving us some options. However, we started the game fairly well, in my opinion. We kind of matched Derby to start, and we were on top even. But in typical Orient fashion, we didn't manage to make our pressure count, and unfortunately, we conceded a scrappy goal. And at this point is where things started to go wrong. So just before half time, we concede. It was a bit of a mix-up between Tom James and Dan Happy. In my opinion, Happy wasn't aggressive enough. I know Richie's talked about that before, and Dan wasn't aggressive enough coming forward to win the ball. Backed off. Therefore, was able to get a shot on goal, and it squirmed in just inside the post. 1-0 to Derby. And at this point, then comes the moment of madness that changed the game completely, with Brandon Cooper throwing an elbow out and getting a straight red card and getting sent off. Lots of questions being asked now about Brandon Cooper, about whether his contract or his loan contract will be extended, given that it was up in January. So have we seen Cooper play his last game for the O's? Quite possibly. And I'll be honest with you, after the ill discipline that we saw, I'm not sure that he's the man to be the one to play in the heart of defence and lead us forward. One of the things that really jumped out for me on Saturday, the heads went down after we went 1-0 down. 2-0, and then the less said about the third goal, which was an absolute debacle from our own corner, the better. What I would say, though, as much as Richie and the coaching staff are working hard to get things right, I think the players need to take a lot of the responsibility. I think it's important to look at what leaders we've got on the pitch, and right now, I'm not seeing that many. There was one point in the first half where Tom James had a free kick, and the two centre-halves went up for the free kick. We messed around, we tried a short free kick, it didn't work, the ball broke down. When the two guys ran back, when the two centre-halves ran back, not a word was said. To my mind, if you take it back to the old pros, when we had the likes of Stevie Castle, Terry Howard, if they're going up, if John Sitton was going up from centre half, and the fullbacks didn't put the ball in the back in the box, they're going to know about it. Get that ball in the box. If I'm making the run, you make sure you deliver the cross. And I think we need to see a lot more of that. People taking responsibility. All right. But like I say, anyway, that's enough from me. Let's hear from Victor's view.
Post-match, Matt Howald explained that Saturday's defeat was all about moments, and he's right. Had Theo Archibald accepted his opportunity in the opening minutes, Brisbane Road would have been buzzing. Had the O's demonstrated greater focus and denied Lewin Sibley his chance, confidence and belief would have continued to have grown. Without doubt, the biggest moment was one of utter stupidity. In commentary, I missed what had happened, just like referee David Rock. But when I was shown the incident by the Derby County analysis team at half-time, I was shocked. Their camera captured what the fourth official clearly saw, a deliberate elbow by Brandon Cooper into the face of County striker James Collins. There's no excuse. It's the second time that the Swansea loanee has seen red, both entirely his fault. Cooper is now 23, undoubtedly a talented, albeit inconsistent defender. Let's hope he learns from this dreadful error of judgment. The moment shortly after the restart presented the Rams with their second, and it demonstrated a lack of composure at the start of a half, and that's becoming a worrying pattern. Derby's third was cruel on a side that had displayed a level of commitment and purpose that had been absent in the freezing depths of North Derbyshire just a few days previously. And there were positive moments on Saturday. Omar Beckles took his chance well. It was close, but the referee was correct. The experienced defender was offside just. Dan Ajayi continues to impress. His moment was another that showed that the only luck that the O's are getting at the moment is bad. The Post denying the exciting striker his first for the club. It's now 2 months since the O's last gained maximum points. That's impacted confidence of a squad that'll be fully aware of the importance of Saturday's game at Cheltenham. The Robins may be bottom, but they come into the game as the form team. Transformed since Daryl Clark took charge of a team that looked as if it was beyond hope, having been on the verge of setting the wrong sort of record. The Gloucestershire club had gone 11 without scoring. The all-time record is 12. Wobb Street scored that long-awaited goal, a one-all draw at Derby County. Clark inherited a side that had gone 9 without a win. The all-important victory came in his third game in charge against his former club, Port Vale, who he'd left to promotion before being sacked in April. 2 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats in Cheltenham's last 6, whilst the O's winless in 8, drawing 5. Orient and Cheltenham last met at Wadham Road back in April 21. Connor Thomas spot on, giving the home side the points. You have to go back to 2009 for the last time that Leighton Orient returned with a win, and it was Dean Morgan on target. And of course, we'll always remember that emotional day in August 2019. Cheltenham supporters presented a magnificent banner celebrating the late, great Justin Edinburgh. Matt Howald, right again. We've come a long way in a short period. There's always going to be difficult times, but we will emerge stronger as a result. And finally, good luck to the youngsters. They take on Newcastle United next Tuesday afternoon in the third round of the FA Youth Cup.
Thank you very much, Dave Victor there. And let's hear from Matt Roper with Roper's Rant.
Winless runs are horrible. They create an air of uncertainty, strip away the goodwill that we all enjoyed last season, and more importantly, send you the wrong way in any division. Bearing in mind we started our winless run in 10th place, you could be forgiven for thinking that after 8 league games without a victory, we would now be lower than 16th. But it's a fact, we are. What is perhaps even more surprising is that we are 6 points off relegation, yet only 5 points off 10th place. Hold that thought, O's fans. Try and make the best of it. Last week I talked about the only way being up and the glass half empty, glass half full scenario. A further non-scoring home defeat has a number of O's fans now peering into the bottom of an almost empty glass with little sight of a victory on the horizon. So, just what do we do to get that all-important 3 points and get the season moving again? Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The 8-game streak contains 4 defeats and 4 draws. We've scored 7 goals and conceded 12. Straight up, it's very easy to say, as with any poor run in football, we need to score more, we need to defend better. But it's the goals for column I'm going to concentrate on this week. During this horrible run, we have only ever been beaten by more than 1 goal once. That was on Saturday against the Derby side that didn't appear superb, but didn't have to really get out of second gear to win the game. In fact, if you add just 2 goals to our tally in any one of those 4 drawn games, we'd have 6 more points on the board and would be sitting where Charlton are in 10th. So is it actually that bad? Well, it is and it isn't. The level of performance has not been great. And of course, because we were so used to winning last year and now we're coming to terms with a side that isn't winning, it compounds this and gets us thinking doom and gloom far more quickly. Goal scoring has been a problem for 2 seasons now. Last year's triumph saw an amazing rarity in that we won the league and didn't have anyone even near 20 goals. This season is the same, but because we're playing at a higher level, mistakes are punished more freely, we are losing games by the odd goal. We are currently the 8th lowest scorers in the division, with 18 goals in 20 games. That's not great by any standards, but it is surmountable when I trot out that this week's amazing stat is Shrewsbury on 27 points and in 11th have scored just 13 in 21 games. Yes, you heard me right. 13 in 21 games. However, you cannot expect to go 2 seasons without regularly putting the ball in the net and be successful, or rather be successful and then sustain your position in the division above. Last year we managed 61 goals in 46 games. So combined with this season, we have now hit the net 79 times in 66 games. That's an average of 1.19 goals per game. And ultimately it's stats like that that will find you out at a higher level where teams have the ability to hit you for 2 rather than 1 goal. Is our front line good enough for League One? Here I make a rather harsh but realistic analysis, but would also remind people that strikers do more work than just putting the ball in the net before I continue. Rule Soteriou. Rule has 30 goals in 127 games for Leighton Orient at a ratio of 1 goal every 4.2 games. Over a season, that would bag him approximately 11 goals. It's not really good enough, unless you're playing second fiddle. Rule works hard and perhaps needs to recapture the form he showed when Wellens first arrived, when we had a nippy, rather greedy, young and hungry striker. Several times people have been frustrated that he was too greedy in the early days, but perhaps he needs to get back to being that driving force up top, get down the park, one mission only. On the ball, head down, drive and get a shot off. Joe Piggott. Joe has 2 goals in 16 games. As bare stats go for a forward, that is plainly nowhere near the level we need him or anyone for that matter to be. 1 goal every 8 games would see him finish on less than 6 goals for the season. He's another hard worker, but is hard work enough? Dan Agge. We cannot assess old Dan's contribution yet, but I, like many, have seen a striker that shows promise. He looks pacey, tricky, and he could well be that new signing we desperately crave come January. Let's hope so. Shaq Ford. He's flattered and deceived, in my opinion, and unfortunately is another youth product that cannot adapt to the men's game. Flashes of brilliance, but 3 goals in 14 games at a ratio of 1 every 5 games is again not going to be good enough to see us dent hard enough opposition defences. Now, it's easy for me and plenty of others to say, lay an Orient board. Go out, get a striker. January is immensely hard to pick up the right players anyway, no matter what position they play in. But to get, say, a proven goal scorer who is willing to come along for the ride is even harder. A free agent is a free agent for a reason. Yes, they can work, but it's not exactly a cast iron guarantee of sticking the ball in the onion bag. Anyone doing well at their club is, of course, not necessarily going to move to us, particularly if in our league or the league above. So that puts a red X against that suggestion. Youth loan needs from Premier League clubs are untried and untested young men. Let's face it, when Harry Kane came to the Orient, we all thought that Tommy Carroll and Mpoku would be the future stars. And it's a lot to ask some 18-year-old scoring sensation to emulate Kevin Campbell's contribution that he made back in 1989, when we were, of course, promoted from the old 4th Division. That leaves us with one option. Buy and or recruit from the divisions below us. At the moment, there are 8 strikers in League 2 who have all hit more than 10 goals. But again, which club is going to be willing to sell? Realistically, what are we looking at? Let's take League 2's top goal scorer, which is Jake Young at Swindon, who is on loan from Bradford. What would Bradford want for him, even if we could get around the loan deal that's in place? It's got to be a minimum £300,000. He's English, he's only 22. That £300,000 figure might be even more. Forget for a minute if he would fit our style of play and if he's a player that Wellens fancies. If that's a realistic figure and we place him on £2,000 a week, we are looking at the best part of £400,000, maybe even £500,000. If it pays off, it's fantastic, but it's a big risk for a board that has already gone in for a much increased budget this year and one that is losing £40,000 a week. We do, however, require a far more proactive approach in the final third, be that creating more chances, Graham is a massive blow here, or being, in my opinion, to be far more clinical. Over several weeks, I've counted numerous decent balls in from Theo Archibald, and not one red, white or blue shirt seems to be gambling to get on the end of them. It's a harsh one this week, and as many of you know, I'm very realistic about how we go about our business. To that end, I will happily concede it's going to be very difficult for the board, Martin Ling and the gaffer to try and repair the problems this January, but repair them we must. Look, I'm not one of these taking to social media saying we're in a relegation fight or that Wellens maybe should go. And yes, there was a very small handful over the weekend actually trotting out this most preposterous suggestion. But if this horrible winless run was to continue to the say of start of 2024, then we would almost certainly be looking right over our shoulders and saying we have half a season to finish 20th or above, as a relegation would be almost disastrous at this stage. But let's keep the faith for now. Let's hope for a positive result at Cheltenham this weekend and up the mighty O's.
Thank you ever so much, Matt. And without further ado, we're going to go straight into hearing from Martin Ling, our Director of Football.
Martin Ling, welcome to the Orient Hour. Thanks for joining us. So firstly, I think it'd be good to hear your thoughts on Saturday's defeat to Derby, if that's all right.
Yeah, I felt for 30 minutes we matched them. If I'm honest, I thought it could have been either team that got the first goal. Obviously, it was them, and that's an occurrence that's happening on a too regular basis recently. Once they get the goal and then the sending off comes, and then obviously it's back against the wall and it becomes difficult, and we got beat 3-0. You know, even with 10 men, if you come out in the second half and maybe hold it tight for a little while, you might sneak one and get an equaliser on the break. But in all honesty, we got what we deserved after the stupid sending off.
Yeah. Do you feel like there wasn't really... It was always an uphill struggle once we were down to 10 men.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, sometimes it can galvanise you and you pull together. I think that against the top, what I see is the top 8 teams, including Derby, certainly be one of them. You know, it's doubly difficult. You might hold on against a lesser team and get that equaliser. But I think someone like Derby, we needed to be at our best, and at our best with 11 men to get a result. So it becomes, as I say, doubly difficult.
And Martin, what would be your honest assessment of the season so far?
Yeah, the honest assessment of the season so far, I think that when we looked, you know, at the start of the season, I was asked to put the teams into groups of eight in terms of the top eight spenders, the middle eight spenders, and the bottom eight spenders. And when we looked at that, we don't know the exact figures, but we sort of come out 14th, 15th in that spend. So for us, we always talked about being in the middle eight, you know, but rather be the top of the middle eight, because that gives you an outside chance at the playoffs. So you had the first four games where we only picked up 1 point, and we're saying they're top teams, and it was, the 1 point isn't as bad as it looks because of the difficulty of the opponents. And then we went on a run where everyone was starting to get excited because we started to, you know, get towards the bottom end of, or the top end of that eight. And then we've gone through a period where, you know, we ain't won a game in eight. Five of them have been draws. And the way I look at it, we're in every single game at the moment. You know, I feel that we're coping, we're in the league, and I feel that we are a little bit better than where we are in the league, but the league doesn't lie. And I do feel that the squad that we've got can push on and you know, make it better. But as I say, the people that were getting really high, or really low in the first four games, and really high with the playoffs, I'll just tend to say middling. And yeah, I think it's been a middling season. We ain't overachieved. We may have underachieved a little bit, but I think that, I'll look at, you know, I'll put into perspective of, people got to look at the bigger picture in terms of what's gone on and how it's gone on. You know, it took us a couple of years to get out of the National League, and we finished 17th in the first year of League Two. You know, so now we've got out of League Two, and gone into League One. And it's about another building block. It's a building block that we want. The club is flourishing in every other department, and we just want the football to flourish with it. But we realise, to be a contender in this league, we've got to be more consistent and better than what we are.
That's fair. I agree, to be honest.
Are you taking all that into consideration? Do you feel... Are you worried in any way about kind of the relative lack of goals this season? Or is that just something that, you know, comes with the territory and the position we're in at the moment?
No, I mean, I think that I am, Richie is, the coaching staff are. You know, the obvious answer is that, you know, if you're not scoring one goal per game on average, which we ain't, there's a worry. But I think that we've got to look beyond just the forward players. You know, it's about a team ethic of defending and a team ethic of attacking. I feel that we don't create, if I'm honest with you, enough chances to be able to get the nucleus of goals that we need. So yes, it's a worry, but it's a worry that I think is quite easy remedied. I feel that some of it's down to, we've played five at the back quite a bit, so that maybe made us a little less potent going forward, but we was winning them games and we wasn't worried about the goals going in. But yeah, I think that the lack of goals is, I wouldn't say a worry, but it needs to be improved, and we feel that needs to be improved in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and you say, how do you feel like that does improve? Like, is there a... Obviously, there's not a quick fix for this sort of thing sometimes, but maybe there is something you feel like we need to be doing a little bit more of.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I mean, as you know, I don't get inside and involved in the coaching side of things, but some of that is about an emphasis to be able to foul. And what I mean by that is sometimes I feel we play a little bit safe, you know, and there's nothing wrong, especially in the top further the pitch of failing to do something. I feel we've lost a massive supply line in Jordan Graham. Yeah. You know, I thought it was a big miss when he got injured, because I thought he was just finding his own form and really showing that he was above this league. And then he goes out of it, and then the supply goes away again. And I just think I think Richie's preferred system, well, I know what Richie's preferred system is. It's either 4-2-3-1 or a 4 1-2, you know, instead of one sitter and two number eights with three up, like left and right wing. And the problem we had is we've not been able to, obviously Jordan Graham and Dan Agia have not featured on the same pitch at any time this year. So if you had Dan Agia, Jordan Graham and Theo as your wingers, but without Jordan, I feel that during the January window, we need to be looking in the wide area for a player and possibly another forward in terms of fetching into the building. So they're the sort of areas that we're earmarked. If you're looking for two forwards, it tends to tell you you're not quite happy enough with a goal return, if I'm honest.
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation about a limited budget for January. So what's the kind of truth there, and will we be offloading players to get some new faces in? And what positions might you be looking at? I know you just touched on a wide player, but is there any more positions as well?
Yeah, I mean, our budget was very competitive at the start of the year. We spent an awful lot of the budget in the summer. There's still some left, if I'm honest, yeah. But also, I feel that the squad could be a little bit... there is some areas where we've got more players than others. So I think that we would listen to other people to reshape the squad. I don't think there's an overhaul that's needed. I think there's a bit of tinkering and a bit of reshaping. And if that means a couple going out to fetch a couple in, then so be it. It's what would happen. I really think that you've got to be careful in January to hit any sort of panic button and go for people. I remember I think it was a Kenny Jackett one when we signed people like Frank Noble, George Ray, Dan Moss, you know, and a lot of it was done in panic mode, if I'm honest, and was trying to calm it, but it didn't work like that. So we feel that we've got a good squad. Do we feel that we could, you know, manoeuvre some positions, then yeah. And that means, I think we look at anything, but I don't mean there's any great demands to say which players are going and which not, because negotiations are different. And also, it's an awful lot easier to get people in than it is to get people out. So we ain't going to be doing chat from the rooftops. But if there's some interest in our players and it allows us to, as I say, reshape a little bit or refreshen, I think is the better word, then we will do. So we've obviously started talking about it, the phone's starting to ring, which players are available, and we're talking to clubs in and around that forward area at the moment. But we've got to make sure they're going to make us better than what we've got, because there'd be nothing worse than fetching someone in and then we end up in a worse position with more people on the wage bill. So it's a fine balancing act in January, and you've got to be careful.
How long have you been working on that January transfer window already? Kind of non-stop?
Yeah, it don't really. I mean, I've got two people that work on it full-time in Steve Foster and Mike Steele. Mike's a lot more to do with the analytical side of it. Steve's more... Mike goes and watches players as well, but we've also got nukes of scouts that are out there. We're forever working on it. It starts to hot up around this time, but I always say as well, you know, before the window shuts, I think we've got about 10 games. You know, we've got 5 games in the next 16 days. So, you know, there's an awful lot could change within that. That may be injury. That may be that one of the people that you've got within your squad, someone's took a shine to and really likes, and it may make it. And you look at every case on a case scenario. Is the person going to make us better? If that person's going to come in, that's going to make that person probably surplus to requirements. So we could be moving on. So look, it's very open. It changes daily, but we've been working on it. I would say, it's a continuous body of work, if I'm honest with you. But it now starts to say, we have like a transfer committee every week that we talk about the possible players that are out there. You've got to do a little bit of background. You know, the loan market could be difficult for us because we've got 5 loan players at the moment. Brandon Cooper is loaned up on the 7th of January, and all 4 loan players have got a callback on the club, on their club side. So that again could change things. You know, if anyone, so again, we get the feel from that, and the clubs that we're talking to say, well, at the moment, he's probably going to be not be called back. But if they get a couple of injuries, we might lose somebody else, and it changes. So we've forever got a nucleus of, if we've got a nucleus of names, we have got a nucleus name, but we're probably owning down a little bit more on the players in wide forward and centre forward.
So if you, for example, obviously things changed, like last January transfer window, we got three centre-backs out in one game, so that changed your thinking immediately, I'm guessing. Is there an argument to be said for like trying to get something done really early, or are you much more in the case of we've got some irons and some fires, we'll see what happens, and if the right person comes along, then we move, or is it just a complete balance?
It's a bit of both, really. If there's one that really, really takes a fancy and that we really like, we may think that if we move early, we might beat other... Because if the player's good and we're earmarking to be good, we're not going to be the only club that's going for him. So it might, in that instance, it might be a case of that we move in early. In other cases, some clubs say to you, we don't know if we're going to let him out. We ain't going to make a decision until, you know, 3 weeks into the window to see where we're at. They may say to us, we're trying to fit somebody in, and then we'll let him out. And yeah, that's the art of the game, really. It's just, I think the best thing to do is to keep calm, have a list of players that we know that we've already got, and I don't think there's any right or wrong whether to move early or move late. I just think it's about moving at the right time.
Yeah.
Going back to one of your earlier points, Martin, was that there's been a bit of speculation going around Soltering, whether Middlesbrough have some sort of like goalkeeper injury crisis and whether he pulled back. I don't know if there's been any contact by Middlesbrough towards Orient. And also, what was the thinking in terms of bringing in a keeper on loan as a number one? Because I know that obviously at some point his loan expires, he'll go back with maybe not the possibility of him returning on a full-time basis. So sort of where do we go from there?
Yeah, I mean, the thinking behind it being a loan, it was the best person at that time, a bit like what I was saying before. So he was we'd earmarked him as someone that we really, really liked, thought he'd be really good for the league. But we know that we could pick up an injury with anybody else. And with Sol at the moment is the two Middlesbrough goalkeepers, one that will go to the AFCON and one will go to the Asia Cup. So they've got two, but they've got another three goalkeepers out on loan. The other two are rated, not rated, they're more senior than Sol is. So the feedback we're getting is not going to be called back. So we ain't got to worry about that situation. But is there a list of goalkeepers within our list? Yes, there is, because we just don't know. And that's the same with Ed Turns, Idy, Ford and Brandon Cooper. It's the same with all of them. But it's something, if you'd go into the loan market, which it's been successful for us in times, you know you have to cross that bridge in January to be able to continue with them loans. So, yeah, it can be a little bit frustrating because it means that you're a little bit, no, I wouldn't say on edge, but you're a little bit aware that someone could be called back. And you say, as a number one goalkeeper, just felt that the quality of the goalkeeper was worth the risk that we've taken, if I'm honest.
Right, we've had loads of questions come in from various fans from various forums and social media. So we're just going to pepper some of those throughout. That's all right.
Okay.
Question about the January budget. Has that been adjusted as the season's gone on, or has that been set in stone since the summer?
No, there was a budget figure that was put in the summer, and there was a proviso that some of that would be used in January. We used a bit more in the summer than we wanted to at the time. We thought the people were right at that time. Yeah. But like anything else, is that there is still some of that budget left, and there's still an avenue to reshape. But as I say, it's a reshape. For me, January is, as I say, I always try to keep, lest we get an injury crisis or players that we've got on loan go back, the least amount of work you can do in January, the better, I feel, for a football club. But if there's things that are needed to reshape, and I think that's what it's about, then we will do it. But January, as I say, I keep saying it, but January can be notoriously difficult to get the right personnel that you want. So the budget has stayed the same since the figure was told at the end of last season what the budget would be for this year. So we've been fully aware of that all the way through.
I know some people were saying towards the end of the transfer window when Jordan Graham was brought in that had been brought forward, but for like from some of the January transfer budget, was that any truth in that or not?
Yeah, I mean, no, the be all end all is a figure given that you can spend over the season. And if you spend a lot of that in January or in the summer, it leaves less for January. Yeah, we did spend a little bit more than we wanted to, but didn't spend it all in the summer. We just felt that Jordan was worth spending the money on. But the be all end all is that we've had these budgets before, and if the right personnel is put forward to, and the right case is put forward to the board and Nigel, it's never stopped us signing players before. So, you know, there is a figure, the figure that we would like to keep to. But as I say, every individual transfer, any individual transfer movement that we do, it will be judged by me personally does it make financial sense, Richard on the football side, does it make football sense, and then Nigel above that to say if we need a little bit more finance, does it make sense there. So it's, you know, there's room for us to do some work within the January market.
Now, you probably haven't seen this, Martin, because I know you're not a big social media man, but there's been a lot of speculation around Daryl McMahon and his role recently from the Orient fans. There was also rumours that he'd actually been sacked over the weekend. I don't know how much you can tell us around that. And
yeah, the thing is with Daryl, I mean, Daryl was coming in as a development coach. That, because if we go away on a Friday, we tried often train on the way up. We leave because we've got quite a big squad. Daryl was coming into them. Richie liked Daryl being in and around the set plays. And Daryl wasn't the total set play coach. It was done between the coaching team. So it was done between everybody. And he at this moment in time, I know Daryl very well. To say he come in on very little money, if I'm totally honest. He's come in with the pretext that if something within football comes up for him, we will quite willingly step aside. And at the moment, the situation with Daryl is that there is some stuff that's going on from his side of things, and we ain't going to stand in his way. It is not 100% concrete at this moment in time. It's nearly there. He hasn't been sacked in any way, shape or form. He's done what we wanted him to do. You can't just put the set plays down to Daryl McMahon and he's the problem. That ain't the case. It's been me and Daryl had had an adult's conversation all the way through, and it looks like he may be moving on, but nothing to do with sacking, more to do with what Daryl sees as his future in football, as he's been a manager for quite a long time.
I suppose maybe just a bit lost in translation then, probably how it's come across towards the fans.
Yeah, look, the thing is, Daryl ain't coming in all of this, in all of what, wherever the season is, it's been done as a unit. From me down to aid of the kit man, and every one of us are responsible in some way, shape or form for the result on a Saturday, and we all take our portion of the blame. Obviously me at the top and Richie where he is will probably take the most stick, I suppose, and maybe take the most credit. I don't really worry about whether it's stick or credit for me, because people get very very over generous with their praise when it's going well, and they get over generous with their criticism when it's not going so well. So that's why I don't bother with social media. I just think it's knee-jerk with people either going, I'm brilliant, everybody's brilliant, or I'm not so brilliant. I was going to swear there, but you know, but neither of them worry me, because the thing is, what I do, you know, try to do is to stay constant. I try to keep calm when there's panic going around. If there's panic going around, my job is to stay right in the middle. Been through it before. This is how we've done it before, and be a real good sounding board for Richie, to allow him to go and do what he's brilliant at, and that's the training pitch. So, as I say, Richie, we don't get high on praise. We don't get down on negativity. It's just it's. I've been in this for 42 years, and it's nothing's changed. It ain't no different today. The only thing is you see it more today because it's on social media. But the same thing was happening when I was a player at 16 at Exeter in 1982. That, you know, you was criticised or you was praised, and I didn't get too high or low then. And I don't now. And we don't as a unit. We're very set in what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And Richie works the same way at the training ground, whether we've not won for eight or we're just won four. So we all believe there's a method and a process that we're going through that will be successful.
Slightly changing the subject. Is there early contract renewal conversations going on? Are you having those discussions yet with players, or are you getting the transfer window out of the way?
Yeah, no, we've talked to a few players in terms of where we see people being with us beyond this season.
Yep.
So yeah, there is initial contacts going that are ongoing. It's a process as well, in terms of that they've got to decide whether they want to sign up now. Do they want to go to the end of the season? All of them things, but we are talking to players. Yes, definitely.
Cool.
Do you think that the club may have been too loyal to certain players? There was a feeling sort of last time when we came up from the National League into League Two that we were too loyal to players who maybe not have been ready to make the step up to that level. Do you think maybe that's the case with some players this time around?
It's an hard one. And what me, you know, this I'll go down this line is that when you go up, the players that are still under contract will have a written rise in their contract to be a League One player. So you're spending you're spending more money on the same quality of player. So does that being loyal, that's in their contract, and we've all got everyone at the football club would have a League Two or a League One contract, or National League or a Championship contract, because wherever you can end up within that, there is a table that's drawn. So I see that's been too loyal to the players, because most of them won the contract. I don't think that we have been, to be honest with you. I think that we've got a good balanced squad in terms of personnel. Is there a little bit of refreshing up that can do? And I think that most clubs, in whether you're top, middle or bottom, probably have a little refresh in January. But no, I don't think there's one player in our squad that ain't capable of playing in League One. That's the easiest way to put it. I really don't. Now, have we put it together on enough basis between now and the start season? No. The thing for me, I would like us to get a result, what I'll call the top eight, you know, the Barnsleys, the Derbies, you know, we've got the draws against them teams, but we haven't picked up a win against what I would put down the top eight. I would like us to do that, for give us the confidence to be able to take that into other games. And you can tell the difference. You can tell the difference between budgets, you know, the wildlife in all of that. If you look at the top eight teams, that'd be the top eight budgets apart from Stevenage, who would be a bottom eight budget. So if they can do it, then why can't we? Obviously, we don't think we're very far away from being able to do what Stevenage are doing. Can they maintain it? Their squad's going to be thinner than everybody else's. So the league is panning out very much. I think that if you take Stevenage out and put Charlton in, I would say then it would be the top eight budgets of taking up the top eight places. So it don't lie. But I would like to get results against them because a third of your games are going to be against them, home and away, so you need to be doing something against them top eight. And we picked up a couple of draws against Barnsley. I think we drew against Peterborough, that would be top eight, but we've not had a win against them teams yet, so that's the next step. And I think that would then help us really believe that we can compete against everybody within the league. I do think we can compete, but we need a result against them to prove it.
Yeah, I agree. I think League One's one of those kind of strange leagues. You know, obviously it's in between League Two and the Championship, but you've got teams like you mentioned, say Stevenage type teams who have a smaller budget, and then you've got massive clubs like your Derbies and Portsmouth and teams like that, where you don't really have that sort of mix within sort of League Two or the Championship. It's quite split at the top and the bottom end in this division.
Yeah, there is. I think the budget differential would be more in this league than any other league. I think that's the thing with it. And I say, I think our budget is, you know, it's competitive. We, obviously, our sometimes don't reach so far because we're in London in terms of what you would get if you into living in London and if you're living in, I don't know, Burton or further north than Burton. But we've got a budget that we decided that I feel that it's competitive. But there is some teams in there that where, you know, your Portsmouths, as you said, your Derbies, your Boltons, you know, your Peterboroughs. You know, you can name all their budgets, and they're going to be quite substantially more than that. And that's where the difficulty comes. And that's to get involved in it. You may get a Stevenage up there. Can they sustain it up there? It'd be interesting to see how they do the second half of the season. But at the moment, as I say, I don't think we're a million miles away. I think the scorelines tell you that. You know what I mean? It's not very often we've got a 3-4. I know we've lost to Portsmouth 4 and we lost to Derby 3, but everything seems to be on the odd goal. And at the moment, things are not quite going for us, but we just need to be... got to stay consistent in what we do, because it's been successful and Richie's been successful. And I'm pretty sure that what we're doing is right, and the results will start to pick up again. We'll end up with a nice finish, and we're talking about how we build on it. Richie goes down the line of, and he's right, if you look at the teams that are up there, it ain't just the budgets, it's also the teams that have been in this league for 4 or 5 years. You know, it ain't someone that sort of, apart from Stevenage, they are the ones. Most of them, Oxford, know a really good budget, but been in this league for a while. You know, it's something that you... We need to put a stepping stone in from being League Two. You know, the chances of getting to the Championship we know are difficult. But if we're looking to build to go towards that, it's going to take time. And you know, as I say, 2 years in the National League, 4 years in the league. Or two, so it just takes a bit of time to, and I do feel there's a little bit of, when you win the championships twice in 6 years, you know, you just think that maybe we've been spoiled a little bit, me as well, not just the supporters, all of us have been spoiled, and you know, we talked about this 6-year plan, it's come to fruition, like for Nigel and the board and everybody, but we could still be in the National League. You know, we could still be Wrexham. I know Wrexham are out now, but we have got where we are, and we've done that pretty quickly, and we just need to take a breath and build again for where we want to go next.
Just slightly going back to that difference between the North and the South and how that might affect teams' budgets and stuff. Do you find that there is the fact that it costs more money to live, and you've probably answered this question before, in the South and in London, does that sometimes affect kind of players' wages and getting players in? Is that a big, especially if they're going to a big club up north?
Yeah, I mean, where it's difficult is that if you look, you know, most of these players, let's put Jordan Graham as an instance. He was in Birmingham, which is not quite, but to rent the place that he's got in London compared to Birmingham was probably £400 or £500 a month more.
Yeah.
Now, if they've got to pay that for the accommodation to stay down there with his wife or his partner, I'm not sure if it's his wife or girlfriend, partner, then we have to pay more, and we do have to pay more, and our don't stretch so far because of that, you know, the rent, because these young players, whoever they are, they've got to live somewhere. And like we all know, if we go to rent a place in the southeast, it's expensive. We try to keep people away from Chigwell for obvious reasons. You pay a lot more. We say there's some areas you can pay, but wherever you go, you still pay more than you do if you come down from Newcastle. You know, the cost of living, I mean, it used to be called the London waiting back in the day. They used to get a London waiting in your wages, and we do suffer from that. Yeah, it is more, we do have to pay a little bit more than a Northern club would have to for the same player.
It's a slight change of subject, but with regards to the FA Cup more specifically, how's everyone feeling after, I know obviously it's pretty obvious, but going out in the second round? I feel like this year, more than any year, there was a bit more emphasis on actually getting a cup run and pushing on because of the fact, obviously, going up to League One and just trying to sort of, like you said, sort of stay in the middle range. So a cup run would have been quite nice, but obviously that hasn't happened, hasn't panned out that way.
Yeah, look, it's a massive disappointment. You know, twofold, really, is that we never had a run in the Carabao. We never had a run in the, whatever it's called now, the EFL Trophy, and we just felt that the FA Cup gave us a good chance of. It's, for me, it's about not just getting as far as we can, but the finances it brings. There's good prize money to be had within it. You know, you may well end up with a live game. You know, we looked at the Watford game, and with the prize money we never got, and the money we would have made out of the Watford game, it makes a big hole. And that hole would have been easier to talk to the board about, spending a little bit more in January if we were still in the cup. That's the big thing with it. And me and Richie knew that. He put his strongest, what we deemed to be our strongest team out to win it, and we didn't perform on the day. But it's the finances that it can make a difference to your season massively in terms of the finances it fetches in and allows you to spend a little bit more. You know, we don't budget for anything on a cup run, because I think that it's foolhardy that you might get something so we can spend it. So it's always seen as money that we've made on top. But yeah, it was massively disappointing, both on a, for the supporters, for the players, and also for me and Richie, in terms of making the January window a little bit more difficult because of that.
I know you have like monthly staff meetings, like the whole staff get together. Is that the sort of thing you discuss as a team, like with the squad and with the directors? Would you kind of discuss the cup run and things like that and the disappointment?
Yeah, Nigel does. We do we started in COVID, if I'm honest, and it's different to most clubs. And I think it's just good that people know who Nigel is, what he's talked about, you know, and the other board members. It's talked about, you know, we don't hide behind the fact that, you know, it was a big game for us and we wanted to win it, and the finances that it brought. We were all fully aware. But Nigel talks on numerous topics. You know, he don't go into football coaching as such, because he's not his specialist subject, but he will go into what the difference that could make for us financially, same as he would his saying about commercial deal. We don't just talk about football, we talk about everything. So yeah, we're very open in that, and Nigel's always been really open with that, with the staff and players.
And with regards to our academy and sort of the younger players we've sent out on loan, is there anyone that the fans should be particularly excited about? A couple of names maybe?
Look, all I ever say is that we've got a very proactive academy. You know, for me, the ones that are probably done the best this year will be Charlie Pegram. He's been out once and he's going to go out again. Zach Abirio has done very well whilst being out on loan. He's had a little taste in around the first team. So they're the two, probably the ones. They're both the same age. They're both, when I say they're both the same age, they're both under 19 players, third year scholars. So they're there too, but there's also what we do now is that we We've got a list of 18. I'm looking at the board now in my office. We've got a list of 18 scholars up there. We will probably take a few of them through to third year. We feel that third year is important now. So we had four third years this year in Pegram, Noah Phillips, Emmanuel Kwachi, and SJ Nalo. So we had, that third year gives us another thing. So are they ready now to go into the first team? So if we are still fetching, what I say to my academy people is that fetch me three players, two players per year that we feel that we can go into the first team and move on, and that academy is continuing to do that at all times. So there's names all the way through, but they're two of the ones that have been in and around the first team most this year, Pegram and Iberio. So it's sometimes it can be frustrating there, and sometimes what happens with, like, Charlie Pegram, for instance, got stuck in that 19th man role. Mm. Where he was always travelling with the squad, sometimes he made the bench, and eventually you have to say, look, it ain't doing him no good, he needs to go out for a month, because he's got to learn his trade. So you've got to be careful you don't get caught in that no man's land, and it can happen to young players. But the academy will always flourish while we're in Leighton, in my opinion. It's more to it than that, because it's a brilliantly and well-run academy, but you do need the raw materials, and East London is a bit of a, as we know, an op-ed for that.
Are you proud of the progress of the academy over the last 6 years?
Yeah, look, I'm proud of the club at this moment. I mean, it's really hard to when sometimes I hear, not negativity, but when I feel people feeling down, not down, but just getting a little bit, you know, down with how the season's going. All right. This club has gone through the roof. You know, academy, we're shutting the doors on 8,000, 9,000 people. You know, when I was here as a manager and we went from 2-1 last time, I think we had about 100 more supporters. You know, we was like 3.5, maybe 4 if we was lucky. Everything about this football club is flourishing so much. And sometimes it's about trying to hold on and get the team to go with it. Yep. The academy is in a really, really good spot. It's got good people running it. The raw materials are coming through. I didn't ever think to say this sentence, we need a bigger ground. Because I didn't think, it's no good saying that when I was here previously in League One. But now the argument is that we do need a bigger ground, whether that's here and they can make it bigger, or it's elsewhere. If I was an investor, I would look at, can I take this club further? I think the only way the club can be taken further is by making it that more people can get to watch the club. Because I think there is more people. I mean, I was told the other day, 5,000 homes were being built within a mile of the stadium. Now, not all 5,000 homes is going to be one person dwelling in it. So let's say there's 7,500 people, and we know there's some of them across. So if you walk around now into different areas, the demographic of this football club has changed massively to when I was here as a player and as a manager. And now I can see Championship football, because I can see a club that can go to the Championship if we can get more people into the stadium. Yeah. So, look, we know that the big thing about them only is Leighton's going through the roof itself, so we need to stay within Leighton. You know what I mean? And I would say, I would make it bigger, whatever the scenario is. But now I can actually see a club that can go and be a Championship club. Could I see that when I was here in 2006? No, just after we went up. Well, no, I couldn't, because I just didn't see we'd have the fan base to be able to do that. I do feel we would have the fan base now. But we just need to take another step forward from where we've come from. You know, in the 6 years, and this ain't me trying to blow smoke up my own backside, but in the 6 years, it's been mammoth. You know, two championships. You know, you could go through your lifetime, you know, trying to get one of them. But we all need to take a breath, make sure we get the window right like we want to, and then give Richie all the backing that we need. And you know something? The fans have changed as well. They maybe feel that there's maybe